Coming up on Golf Today, Victor, the smiling Norwegian, goes back-to-back at the Hero, the only player besides Tiger to do it. Can a win against a small field mean big things for 2023? And speaking of the big cat, he was on TV quite a bit last week, even though he didn't play. Can Tiger somehow, some way, cobble together one great final act next year? And a two-time NBA champ turned college golfer, J.R. Smith, hops on to talk about his golf pass collaboration with Chris Como, plus balancing birdies and schoolwork. Class is in session on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Good Monday to you. Dave Mernack alongside Ryan Lavner, senior writer at Golf Channel, usually with Georgia Bulldog paraphernalia behind him, but live and in the flesh in Connecticut. How's it going for you so far?
Good. I actually have saved the red and black for Tuesday and Wednesday this week. This is great. I was thinking on the way over here, this is the first time that you and I have been cutting up on a desk in, I think, 2 years.
It's been a minute. Yeah, it has been a minute.
I got my makeup on. I got my quarter zip. I'm back in the uniform. I feel reborn again.
Speaking of looking great, how about this Victor Hovland? I mean, what's next? The Turks and Caicos Open or the Bora Bora Masters? I mean, the guy likes himself some resort golf.
I think the Scottish Open next year is probably something that's going to be penciled in. Look, he's the island king.
Yeah.
He even posted on Instagram earlier that he loves him some resorts. Sorry to argue. No one wins more in the shoulder season than Victor Hovland.
Back-to-back years joining Tiger Woods as the only players to successfully defend a Hero title. Now, after the win, Hovland spoke to Steve Sands and had a cool response to joining such elite company.
To put your name next to or with Tiger Woods is always something special. Last year, he handed you the trophy. Today, he's going to hand you the trophy, and you are going to join him as the only players to ever go back-to-back in the 23-year history of the Hero World Challenge. What does something like that mean to you?
Yeah, that's pretty badass.
Gotta love that and pretty blank standing next to a 15-time major champ. Tiger went on to congratulate Victor on Twitter, thanked Hero and its support of the TGR Foundation. How about Hovland's 2022, by the way? Saw him reach as high as number 3 in the world, no worse than number 12, and now ranked number 9. 2 wins in 2022, 10 top 10s in 26 starts. So how does Victor assess his year?
Definitely feels a little bit better ending up with a win. I think it was a step in the right direction, even though I feel like I should have won more tournaments this year. You know, there's a couple that stinks, or a couple of just tournaments that I just didn't play well enough, and there were too many weeks where I just kind of had to grind and get through the round instead of showing up and attacking and feel like I was going to shoot 7-8 under. You know, it was just too many times where it was, okay, if I play well, maybe I can shoot a couple under. And that's been a little frustrating, and I feel like I still have some work to do there. But this is obviously a huge step in the right direction.
It seems like we talk about Victor Hovland, we praise his ball striking, we praise his attitude, and we criticize his short game.
I think you make a great point with resourcefulness, the intangibles. But you see intangibles, I see the progress that Victor Hovland has made with his putting stroke. This was a guy who, when he came out of Oklahoma State, was a preeminent ball striker, was very, very accurate. But look at the progress, Damon, that he's made in his last 3 full seasons. He's a top 25 putter on the PGA Tour. And when you pair that with his ball striking, he's a top 25 ball striker, you're going to have a guy who, not surprisingly, now has multiple wins in his last 3 full years. Now, the big switch when it came to Victor Hovland was switching to this Aimpoint Express. Jeff Smith, his swing coach, recommended that. He was, by his own admission, a terrible green reader. But now that he's matched up what was actually a very good stroke with some better green reading, pair that with his ball striking, I think you have the hallmark of now a top 10 player. You saw it in that highlight package, too. He's kind of playing away from that deficiency, right?
Sure.
With his short game. And that's really the big next frontier for Victor Hovland. He kind of reminds me a little bit, Damon, of Brooks Koepka. When Brooks Koepka's first couple years on tour, everyone knew about his ball bashing, but when he got around the greens, it was a little bit of a mess. He hires Pete Cowan. They add an array of short game shots around the green. He adds that to his arsenal, ends up being a four-time major champion. Now, Brooks Koepka is never going to win a scrambling contest with Jordan Spieth or Cam Smith. However, he's good enough. If Victor Hovland, that's what I think is so encouraging, if he can get to that point, he's just 25. I don't think he's a finished product by any stretch of the imagination. His ceiling is so high because he still has so much more that he can improve.
And he can also improve his major championship result, as you've talked about. He's won in Puerto Rico. He's won the Mayakoba a couple of times, and now two heroes. Talk about the resort vibe or how relaxed it is. I think it also speaks to how well he plays in the wind. He loves flighting his driver low. He finds a lot of fairways that way. So he sees shots from off the tee. And we've seen him so often living in the middle of the fairway because of his great tee ball game.
Absolutely. In major championships, you have to get up and down. And that's kind of the it's been the reason why he only has one top 10 finish. It came this year at St. Andrews where big putting surfaces, didn't have terrible conditions. You can putt it from everywhere. Yeah. And he did, 54-hole co-leader.
Congrats, Victor Hovland, going back-to-back at the Hero World Challenge, joining Tiger Woods as the only players to do so. It was a two-shot victory over Scottie Scheffler, who's runner-up second straight year. Final round, 69 for Victor Hovland. Folks, coming up, we're joined by a two-time NBA champ, J.R. Smith. After spending 17 years in the association, he's become a college golfer at North Carolina A&T. More on his journey from the hardwood to the golf course. Coming up. And we're back on golf today. J.R. Smith drafted in the first round of the 2004 NBA draft by the New Orleans Hornets. Spent 17 years in the NBA over the course of his career. Won two championships, 2016 with the Cavs, 2020 with my Los Angeles Lakers, been a sixth man as well. Then following his retirement from the NBA, announced that he would be going back to finish his education at North Carolina A&T State University, and now a member of the golf team as well, and not just a player, was named the 2021-22 NCAA Academic Athlete of the Year thanks to a 4.0 GPA. Quite a wonderful honor for JR. Now today, premiering on the new Golf Pass series, private lessons in this series. Viewers are able to eavesdrop as the Golf Pass coaches work with their students to identify parts of their swing that need attention and then give them specific drills to fix the issue. In this episode, you can see the two-time NBA champ visit Golf Pass coach Chris Como for a private lesson. And J.R. Smith joins us on this Monday. What was the most appealing thing to you about spending time with Chris, who's worked with Tiger and Bryson, among others?
For me, I think the most appealing part was about like how fast the transition for him to understand, like obviously everybody doesn't think the same, but to make you feel certain sensations in the golf swing. For me, he was able to translate that to me very quickly. And obviously I've been playing for a very long time. Well, not a very long time. I've been playing for like 13 years and I feel like I should be much better than what I am. And he like literally taught me how to, you know, knock down shots and, you know, hit certain shots to really make me more efficient. And I've gotten so much better, like literally in the last couple of weeks. It's been a real treat for me because everybody knows how stressful the golf game is. I'm not going to say I got it figured out, but it's gotten a lot better.
JR, golf wise, what's been the most important step in your development?
I'm trying to take the ego out of the game. I think that's the hardest part because in coming from a sport like basketball, which I've done, you know, since I was 3 years old, I was putting repetition in for countless amount of hours. And I just, for me, the biggest part about the golf game, I have a ego of thinking I'm going to hit the right shot all the time when it's already a very difficult game for pros, let alone amateurs. And to have that ego of not even putting the work in, the time in, and then going out there and expecting amazing results, trying to conquer that, I think that's the biggest thing. Because understanding that these guys and, you know, seeing when I go see or play with pros, you know, they spend 8-9 hours on a range over, you know, hundreds and hundreds of days, thousands of days, let alone, you know, me trying to come out here and just thinking it's going to be you know, a light switch and it's going to happen for me.
What aspect from your basketball career helps you the most when you are playing golf?
It's funny because it's like a gift and a curse, right? So, like, I've been a shooter my whole life, and there's never been a shot that I was afraid to shoot. So sometimes when I need that confidence going into some of these shots, and unfortunately I have a lot of false confidence, but sometimes it pans out for me. So I think that and understanding the balance in your swing, I think, because I'm as being a shooter and you have to have balance in your legs. And obviously for me, I've been an off-balance shooter for so long, but when you when you're, if a swing is equivalent to a jump shot, you need the base and, you know, the stability to perform in at certain levels. And it's funny because I just seen Tiger say something about talking to Charlie and about not copying my swing, copy Rory's swing. You never see me, you never seen Rory off balance in the swing. It's like, it's funny, like, dang, okay. Now it really, like, it hits home because it starts to translate for me as being a jump shooter.
JR, your decision to join the golf team, what was the assimilation process like joining kids who are maybe 20 years younger than you and obviously being the most famous athlete on campus? What's that experience like?
It's amazing, you know, getting to know the younger generation and understand where they come from and what they care about and what's important to them. It's a very humbling feeling because I remember being at that point before having kids, but not having that experience as, you know, being away from home. So a lot of that is, for me, it's a treat because I get to see, I get to teach and learn at the same time. I get to teach them about, you know, becoming men, becoming young women, because I have female teammates as well. We have a women's team. And just getting to talk to them and understanding their problems and struggles as well as their joys and happiness and everything else. And what makes it so sweet of being at A&T, everybody, you know, everybody's very open to whether it be suggestions or giving advice. It's a place where everybody is really looking out for one another. And it's literally one of the greatest places I've been.
It's interesting, JR, you've been very open about this new chapter in your life, admitting that you hated school when you were younger. What kind of feedback have you gotten from people on Twitter as you share these stories of trying to go to office hours and doing the extra things to become a good student?
I've gotten a lot of great feedback. A lot of people feel the same way. Just didn't, you know, had the courage to say it. For me, I never really had the courage to talk about school or anything about, you know, reading education or anything. I felt like that was on that level because I already had an insecurity from how I felt about it when I was growing up. I was already, you know, classified as, you know, ADHD, dyslexic, ADD. So all of these things, when it comes to certain things in the classroom, it just didn't make sense to me. So I gravitated towards the sports. And for me, it's translated well because I'm good at basketball, football, baseball. I can play golf. I can do this. I can do that. But also I had a lack of the education and knowledge from just a insecurity of not understanding it and understanding I'm not like everybody else when it comes to comprehending, whether it be schoolwork or certain intelligent things that I thought at the time. So for me is to overcome it as a man going to 37 years old, I talk to my therapist about it a lot. It's a trauma that I've finally overcome, and I want to speak out about it more because I know a lot of people have this insecurity. People older than me, people younger than me, people same age as me. And I feel like if you can let that out and overcome that, you can do really great things.
Along those same lines, what's been the most rewarding part of being a student athlete for the first time?
I would say the meal plan, I guess.
I didn't say the best. I said the most rewarding.
I think the most rewarding is learning from the younger generation. For me, I came into a situation where I was you know, 17, 18, and I'm working with 33, 34, 35-year-olds, 36-year-olds, 45-year-olds in front office positions and stuff like that. And I didn't really know how to, you know, move in that atmosphere and move and be confident in that atmosphere and what I'm saying and how to communicate what I'm saying to these, to the people who I felt like I looked up to or in higher positions. So for me to be able to go back, I can teach that to my teammates and I can teach that to the youth, like, you know, about how to go about, whether it be sending emails to professors and, you know, for me, that's been an insecurity for me going to school. I never wanted to talk to the teacher about why I couldn't understand this or why it didn't make sense to me. So for somebody else, or whether it be with schoolwork or whether they're having a problem in their regular life, whether whatever it is, be able to teach them to have that communication and opening up, I think that's one of my purposes here.
JR, it's one thing to win an NBA title. You've done it twice. To win the Academic Athlete of the Year, considering, you know, where you were with school as a younger man to where you are now, when you were notified that this was the award you were going to be given, you know, what were the thoughts that were going through your mind?
So many thoughts, honestly. For me, it was more like, you know, I accomplished this goal, but, like, I can't wait to come. My first thought was I can't wait to call my kids. Because one of my daughters and I have the same tutor. So we were going through some of this math stuff together and trying to figure it out. And, so that was, like, for me, that was the biggest joy because I felt like we did it together, her and I. And, and it's funny because she's in sixth grade. I'm a freshman in college and we're literally learning the same math and I'm struggling. She's getting it with no problem. I'm like, yo, what is dividing, multiplying fractions and all of this? I'm like, I have no idea where I'm at. And, you know, be able to get through that and to do it with her, I think that's one of the best teammates I've ever had in my life, for sure. She really helped me through it. And that's something I can cherish beyond just multiple experiences that I had, even playing in the college golf tournament.
JR, besides spending a lot of time in campus dining, apparently, can you give us just a sense of what your day-to-day routine looks like?
Well, for me, it's 8 to 12. I'm in tutoring class or whatever because a lot of my classes are online, so I'm not in school as much as people think I'm on campus. So I'll do that Monday through Friday. Then I go to the range, try to get better, of course, for about 2-3 hours. Squeeze in food at the range somewhere. I've been traveling, so I go back and forth between North Carolina and New Jersey, see my kids, go to school, try to fit in golf because the weather's obviously, you can't really play golf in the Northeast right now. So, but it's kind of hectic. I try to fit it all in and make it work for me. And unfortunately, it has been. It's just a lot of moving. I thought I was done traveling as much once I stopped playing ball, but it seems like I travel more now.
When you got that 4.0, LeBron James reached out to you on Twitter congratulating you. You said, thank you, King. He likes golf, kind of starting to play a little bit. We've seen some videos floating around here or there. What would it take for LeBron, clearly one of the great athletes of all time, to kind of become more proficient in this game? Any plans to get LeBron on a golf course again soon?
I would love to get him on a course. For him, I think it would be amazing because being in nature and being outdoors and being away from everybody, you could throw your phone in the bag, have a drink, smoke a cigar, just enjoy the time. I think that would be such an amazing part of, you know, his life to make him, you know, just give him a time to himself, that peace of mind. The golf game, I don't know if he has the fluidity, I'm just gonna say, to perfect that swing. or not perfected, but like to be, you know, one of those guys who can move it around early. I think it's going to take him a while. He's going to have to get some lessons. I'm open teaching, but obviously I'm not the best either. So he has access. I mean, him and Tiger are Nike, you know, so they can figure that out.
You're the reigning athlete of the year. JR, do you think in your college career you can get to a point where you're a contender for player of the year?
I've been going back and forth with this because I'm trying to tell myself to be modest and stay humble, but within that, I'm trying to still compete and really like have that fire. So I'm gonna say yes, just because if you want something, I believe in speaking it to existence. And you know, if you don't believe it, then it's not gonna happen. So I believe I can do it. So yeah.
JR, would you consider yourself an inspiration at this point in your life and career?
Inspiration? No, I don't think I'm an inspiration. I think I'm just trying to do and excel what can be best for me. I don't know if it's an inspiration to people. I don't think so. I mean, not to me. Just another guy out here. Just so happened I played basketball for a really long time and was able to go to college. It's funny because I always thought about going back to school and what it would be like. And if I did play a sport or another sport, I never thought it would be golf. That's for sure.
Well, JR, clearly you're making it happen in this second career. We can't thank you enough for your time. We'll look forward to watching you have private lessons streaming on Golf Pass with Chris Como. Best luck the rest of the year and hope to catch up with you again soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. I got to get you guys out there on the course to see what y'all game like. I know all y'all can play, so I just want to. I just need to know how many shots am I getting though.
What do you think? You give him a couple?
I mean, he said we can play.
Yeah, yeah.
I know I can.
Oh, I'm game.
I don't know about you.
I finished T2 at Pebble, you know, so I'm ready. I'm ready. We got you, JR. We'll make it happen.
Oh yeah, okay. Bet. I just need the shots. That's all I'm looking for.
All right, 2-time NBA champion, and yes, Athlete of the Year, North Carolina AT&T, J.R. Smith, back after this.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today. Yesterday, it was Victor Hovland successfully defending his title in the Hero World Challenge, holding off Scottie Scheffler. When you win Tiger's event, you get to spend some time with the 15-time major champion. Earlier this week, Tiger had this to say regarding his upcoming schedule.
The goal is to play just the major championships and maybe one or two more. That's it. I mean, that's physically, that's all I can do. And I told you that, guys, you know, the beginning of this year, too. I mean, I don't have much left in this leg. So gear up for the biggest ones and hopefully, you know, lightning catches in a bottle. And I'm up there in contention with a chance to win, and hopefully I remember how to do that. You know, giving myself a chance to get out there again.
Tiger talking about the future. This is December schedule. Of course, had to withdraw from the Hero World Challenge, competing in the match and then the PNC Championship alongside Sung Charlie. Go to watch that on the channels of Golf Channel and NBC. Your thoughts, Ryan, on what Tiger had to say, because you never really know. I mean, he probably doesn't really know exactly what the future holds.
Yeah, I think the plantar fasciitis was a reminder of just how fragile this whole thing is. Like, it's all connected, the foot to the leg to the hip to the back. Like, it's all trying to work in concert, and at this point, it's just kind of breaking down. I think the big difference, and we've noticed, I think, over the past year in this recovery from the leg injury, is there's a difference in how Tiger talks at tournaments he's playing and tournaments that Tiger talks when he's in this hosting role. When he's hosting and not playing, he's more open, he's more honest, he's more transparent. I would say he's more realistic about his outlook. And then when he's at tournaments, whether it's the Masters, PGA Open Championship this year, he's almost like he's conditioned. So I'm here. My goal is to win.
Right.
I've been ramping up for this. I feel prepared. When he's not, it's, I don't know how much time my leg has left. I don't know how much more time I has to be competitive. It's clear that he's trying to squeeze out as much as he can. And we actually get glimpses of that when he's not playing.
How much do you think he has left to squeeze out? Because I've been conditioned now, and probably a lot of the folks at home, is to think that this guy can pull a rabbit out of the hat because he's done so many times, from microdiscectomy surgery and chipping woes and this car crash. I mean, he continues to find a way to at least play golf. He said in a golf cart he's shooting 4, 5, 6, 7 under at home. Do you think that he has enough left to really realistically compete against Justin Thomas and Scottie Scheffler?
Skill-wise, like, I have zero doubt that he can shoot 64, 65 at home like it's nothing with a golf cart. I mean, that's what I think what the frustrating dichotomy is that he is talented enough to still probably win tournaments on the PGA Tour and probably still to win major championships. But the actual walking, what it seems so rudimentary to competitive golf, is the thing that troubles him the most. And look, he still made cuts in two major championships this year.
Yes.
14 months removed from a devastating car crash in which we wondered whether he was ever going to be able to walk again. I think he's realizing, and he probably realized in 2022, just how difficult it's going to be to try to peak these four times a year against players that are bigger, stronger, faster than they ever have been before.
We've always framed Tiger in terms of major championships about the big chase for 18. He's got 82 PGA Tour wins. When he says lightning in a bottle, does that sound like three majors to you? Does it sound like lightning in a bottle means one more major, one more quick run? How do you assess
that?
It's one more.
One more. I mean, a lot of people view the 2019 Masters a little bit
that
of lightning
been
in a bottle.
Yeah.
Everything kind of coalesced into one magical moment at Augusta National. I know you and I were grateful to be able to experience that with the rest of the golf world. I think he'd be thrilled with one more. And you have to keep in mind with the schedule that he's going to be playing moving forward. He said he'd love to play the major championships and maybe one or two more. To me, he'd love to play the Genesis, benefits his foundation at Riviera, a place he's never won. He'd love to play the Players' Championship, home of the PGA Tour. I think that would give him a good barometer of where his game is a month ahead of the Masters. It's just hard to see him doing that. He wants to make sure that he can give it a go in those four big ones.
As competitive as he is, and as much as I know he wants to keep winning, I'm starting to sense him sliding into a role of putting his efforts in golf into his son and the joy he will have playing alongside and competing. But also we're seeing him caddy for Charlie, and they are, you know, shoulder to shoulder last week in the Bahamas, and Charlie is starting to thicken out and grow into that frame and you know, earlier than Tiger did at the same age. I mean, Tiger was, you know, a string bean when he turned professional in 1996. How much do you think that is fueling Tiger, just from a big picture standpoint? His love of golf in some ways will now be kind of lived through his son.
I think certainly Charlie is one aspect of it, and he did. He looked like an absolute beast. Like, I can't wait to watch him at the PNC Championship.
Yeah.
117 mile an hour speed. That's like average swing speed on the PGA Tour. I can't wait to watch him next week in Orlando. But I think you're seeing that with Tiger. He's just kind of broadening his horizons, broadening his interests, his business development. I think this year he was probably more active than he's ever been with the future of the PGA Tour, because Jay Monahan, Rory McIlroy, they needed him to be a little bit more involved. That's not to say he's about to become a ceremonial golfer.
Yeah.
And I think a larger discussion of whether, you know, a T45 at the Masters is going to be enough to satiate him. I think that's probably a discussion for next year. But he's starting to shift his priorities a little bit, as they should now on the eve of his 47th birthday.
We know how he's built, though. It's hard to imagine him be anything but a fighter once he gets inside the ropes. We'll see what he has left going forward. Still to come on golf today. This week it's the QBE shootout down in Naples, Florida. Some big names are going to be in the field. Back in 96, you had Tiger and Kelly Chaney competing together. It's going to shift to a mixed team format. Just how many new faces might we see at Tiburon in 2023? Beth Ann Nichols joins with details next. Biff, great to see you. Let's start with Ashley, who earlier this year also won the AIG Women's Open. What do you make of this season?
Well, she said the best golf of her life is ahead of her. And I think we can definitely believe her after she capped off her season and such dramatic fashion. And I think one thing I want to point out that's kind of fun is that when she won at Muirfield, there was a lot made about her husband, who was outside the ropes, you know, living and dying with every shot coming up 18 in that playoff. And this time he was inside the ropes, caddying for her, reminding her to stay committed to every shot. So a much different vantage point there, but a great celebration for the two of them. You know, Ashley said in the winner's press conference that her parents put her on a plane when she was 13 years old and sent her from South Africa to Australia to play in the Jack Newton all by herself. And I think that was a reminder to us that Ashley Simon, as she was before she was married, was a phenom back in the day. And so it's just wonderful to see her game fulfilling on all this promise that she showed as a youngster. And I really think Ashley's a great big picture thinker. I think she's going to be a tremendous mentor for years to come for a lot of young South African players, because she's seen the highs and the lows.
Beth Ann, some big news this week with the QBE shootout set to become a mixed team event in 2023, something that fans have been clamoring for a while. How important do you think it is that the top men's players participate in this moving forward?
Oh, it's absolutely critical. You know, I mean, I first watched the JCPenney Classic when I was in high school. I watched Tiger Woods and Kelly Keeney, and it was a wonderful pro debut for Kelly. And it made such a huge impression on me, that event, watching Laura Davies and John Daly play side by side together, and Beth Daniel and Davis Love III. And I later learned that Brittany Lincecome was out there working as a standard bearer, watching her idol, Laura Davies. I mean, just such a huge event for young people to find inspiration. And I think to get folks to tune in, you really need those big name male stars to show up. So I'm hoping that the field greatly improves on the men's side, because the women are going to show up. The money's really good for an LPGA player. The winner's check, they split it. They get $425,000 a piece this year, which we don't know what it'll be next year, but that's a lot of money for in the women's game. So, you know, I think I'm hoping that top male players will think about their daughters. They'll think about their sisters. They'll think about all the friendships that they've made and junior golf along the way and college golf, and will say, you know what, maybe I was going to shut it down early, but I want to play in this one.
Well said. Hopefully the fellas answer that call. Let's get to the LPGA Q series. Beth Ann, what stood out to you so far?
Well, it's really interesting because this is the first year that in order to tee it up in the final stage, you had to turn professional. So we saw six amateurs turn professional, and five of those amateurs, that newly minted pros, made the cut and advanced into the second week. And among those players, we had Ashley Lau, who played for Michigan, and Valerie Plata from Michigan State. So two fifth-year seniors. Both of them were players of the year in their time in college. And you know, what's so important about this, I want to point out, is that I think this really levels the playing field, because if you were a professional playing in this event and you lost your tour card, or you toiled on the Epson Tour and now you're trying to break through on the LPGA for the first time, you're playing for your job. And in the past, if you're an amateur who can just go back and play college golf if it doesn't work out, your mentality is totally different. And so I think this really, from a mental standpoint, levels the playing field, that everyone out there has a lot more skin in the game.
Keeping with the college theme, Beth Ann, the NCAA Women's Championship is expanding the field from 24 to 27 teams. Do you think this goes far enough, and what impact do you think it'll have?
No, it really frustrates me, Ryan. You know, on the surface, it looks like a win, right? Oh, yay, three more teams. But when you really dig down further and you realize that you have to think of regionals for golf, like round one of the basketball tournament, okay? This is where the AQs go. This is the road to nationals. This is where it all begins. And the NCAA already allocates the fact that there are more men's teams than women's teams in regionals. In other words, there are 81 teams that advance to regionals except for the men, and 72 that advance for the women. And then after that, in other championships, in other sports, when you go to the next step, the championships mirror each other for men and women. So I see no reason why there shouldn't be 30 men's teams and 30 women's teams at the finals. And this has opened up a big can of worms, because you can't evenly divide 6 into 27. So there's going to be a lot of controversy in terms of how many, you know, which teams, you know, how many teams advance out of each region, who gets to go to each region, what's the strongest region. And it's just totally unnecessary. They need to hopefully make another, the women's committee needs to make another recommendation to the championships oversight committee, and they need to get this fixed before May so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Beth Ann, real quick, Ann Van Dam, known as one of the longest hitters in the game, is stepping up for a colleague. What should we know?
Oh, I love this. It's the season of giving, right? And Ann Van Dam, bless her heart, yesterday she had an Ironman, a half Ironman, which is over 70 miles total of swimming, biking, and running. She told me that the running portion, which is just, you know, a casual half marathon, was the most difficult. But she set a goal of finishing in 6 hours. It took her 6 hours and 8 minutes. And she's raising money for Grace Park and Pete Godfrey's precious daughter, Grace, who, of course, last year has started suffering these awful brain seizures and still suffers from undiagnosed epilepsy. And there are just a lot of costs associated with her care that insurance doesn't cover. And so Anne wanted to race for Grace. And so she did that yesterday triumphantly. I'm just so amazed by not only the efforts physically, but also her heart.
No question about it. What a wonderful story. Beth Ann Nichols, always great to visit with you. Enjoy the day. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much, guys.
All right, folks. Golf Today is back right after this. Put a bow on this big Monday. Speaking of the perfect gift, J.R. Smith, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years. That was about as cool an interview, I think, as I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, that was really cool to have him on today. And he's not doing it for the celebrity or the promotion. Like, clearly, North Carolina A&T is getting a lot of exposure for this. But he's doing this to better himself. It really sounds like he's investing himself a lot in the coaches and the other student-athletes there. And what an invaluable resource. Mm. And J.R. Smith, a two-time NBA champion at your disposal, this kid's got to be eating it up.
And the message she's saying, like, I'm not an inspirational figure, but I think he's still inspiring people by sharing the struggles that he had as a kid, not liking school, but using the office hours, talking about eating healthy, worrying about diabetes in the African-American community. I mean, I think he's doing a service beyond himself.
His children, certainly, and specifically the players on that team.
We'll see you tomorrow.